Morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners will come to order. This day, Tuesday, May the 5th, 2015. Good time to turn off any cell phones or any other ringing devices. Happy Cinco de Mayo to our Mexican friends. Condolences to the French. I'll stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Moving along day today to item number 3. This is discussion and possible action. Approval of today's agenda for May 5th, 2015. Do we have any changes to make today?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have several. Staff would ask that you continue item 21, the licensing for the Gold Hill Hotel. They are operating under a temporary license right now. Also 22, the licenses for the Bonanza Casino. They're operating under a temporary. Number 23, the licensing for the Delta Saloon, they're operating under a temporary license as well. And item number 24, continue licensing for the Virginia City Brew House and Tap House. They're operating under a temporary also. All these folks are making adjustments necessary upon their acquisition of the business. Staff would also ask that you delete item number 25. The person requesting that has notified me that the matter has been resolved. And continue items 26 and 27 to a date and time specific of 10 a.m. Here at the courthouse on our June 1st meeting, with a special notation that that meeting will occur on a Monday, subject to your approval of the consent item, agenda item number 9. So to repeat those, basically continue 21 through 27, with the notations that I've made, and delete item number 25.
Does anybody else have any questions concerning today's agenda item? And at this point, look for a motion.
I'll make a motion to continue item 21, 22, 23, 24, 26 and 27, and should I include the deleting?
Sure, go ahead.
I'll also add to that motion to delete item 25.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved to second to go ahead and continue 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Excuse me, delete 25. Continue 26 and 27 till June 1st meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion carries. Moving along now to item number 4, discussion and possible action, the approval of the minutes for April the 7th, 2015. Does anybody have any questions or concerns with the minutes of April the 7th? Hearing none, look for a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second your motion, then move to second to approve the minutes of April the 7th, 2015. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and motion carries. Moving along now to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any questions, concerns with today's consent agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion.
I'll make a motion for the approval of the consent agenda.
I'll second that motion. Move to second to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion carries. Moving along now to item number 11, discussion of possible action. Approve a cooperative agreement with the State of Nevada Department of Taxation specifying the dates and procedures for distribution to Story County of the Economic Diversification District Number 1, revenues pledged pursuant to ordinance number 14-260, and a reimbursement agreement with TEPA.
Mr. Chairman, if I may lead off, first off, I'd like to introduce two of the many faces behind Tesla that have taken time to join us today for our meeting. The first is one of Tesla's taxation directors. I got the chance to meet Mark Olson. Mark, you want to kind of wave your hand, stand up? Yeah, if you'd like to say a few words, no problem, but I know. But I got a chance to meet Mark for the first time today, and I'll tell you, he's got a great personality and sense of humor, and he's probably the only guy with the word tax in his title that I've ever cared to talk to whatsoever. So he's one of the Tesla top guys, and he's taken time to be here today. Also, gentlemen, I've come to know and respect immensely over the last probably 6 months or so, maybe even longer, Mr. Alec Leith, Mr. Leith. Alec is outside counsel to Tesla, but he has been principal in the crafting of these documents together with my right-hand man, Bob Morse, for the last many months. I'll tell you just a little story about Alec. I've come to really like the guy, which is scary when you're trying to negotiate transactions like this, but I will tell you that I learned recently that Alec grew up a big fan of Bonanza. So he was anxious to giddy up here today. And not only did he grow up as a big fan of Bonanza, his nickname as a young man was Hoss. So true story, Alec? Okay. So. There you go.
You can't keep the secret,
y'all. All right. And if you couldn't tell, Alec is from Alabama. So he talks a little bit different than us, but I've gotten to learn that, too, because my dad grew up in Amarillo. So moving right along, there are really four items pertinent to today's agenda, two of which we're going to ask you to act on, two of which we're prepared, council and staff are prepared to ask to continue but allow public comment on. But I want to give a generic overview first. We all remember, hopefully, that at the special session last September, in which the terms of the Tesla presence and incentives and packages were debated in our state legislature, particular to our conversations here today is Senate Bill 1 from the special session. Senate Bill 1 provided the vehicle that really was instrumental in getting Tesla to come here, along with others. This is where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. It provided, amongst other things, to work into the abatement incentive processes that were being considered. It provided for really a number of working components that gets a little complex. So I'm going to take a little bit of extra time trying to explain each one. And Bob Morris, who has been my right hand throughout every bit of this, both on weekends, weeknights, you know, and weekdays occasionally, will jump in if I either misstate or miss something. There really are four agreements, and these are four agreements or four working documents, I should say, because at least one is not an agreement, that are integral to this overall project. The first one is a cooperative agreement between the county and the state of Nevada's Department of Taxation. The terms of the deal provided a 100% abatement of sales and use taxes for 20 years to Tesla. So the state gave up a massive chunk, but that again tells you how important it is for, you know, a project like Tesla. However, they could not abate certain portions of it, but found the way to go ahead and remit those to us with the clear understanding that we would then enter into an agreement simultaneous with Tesla that would pass those monies from us to them expeditiously. So those are really items number 11 and 12, the cooperative agreement with the state, and then our subsequent approval to reimbursement agreement with the county and with Tesla. So those two staff is asking for you to hear today. They are essentially pass-throughs. They are very simple, in my opinion, and they're net neutral, net revenue neutral or net expense neutral to us. Tesla has to have and cause an independent audit to validate the validity of documents that they submit to us to seek reimbursement on. Those costs are paid by Tesla. The state, good news is the state's not holding back any processing part of this, and neither is the county. So staff is prepared to recommend to you today approving items 11 and 12. I want to go on and continue for just a minute and come back to those two, though. Items 13 and 14, we've provided you all the documentation we have up to date right now. We've had the ordinance in front of us, item number 14, for quite some time. I'm going to deal with that one first. That is, again, SB 1 had a provision in there that Tesla could request and the county could consider abatement in part or in whole of our plan review and permitting fees charged by both the fire department and community development departments. Our plan review fees are currently based on valuations. They have been in effect for, I want to say, almost 20 years without modification. And they work well for the average-sized projects out there, up to and including, you know, good-sized projects like Ardagh Meadows, Walmart, and the others. But when you take that to a whole higher, exponentially higher scale that the Tesla project is, the overall fees become questionable as far as our ability to really say, you know, how much work are we putting in, how much are we collecting. So we have agreed and sat down with them, and I'm here to tell you that the terms that are provided in the ordinance, we've reached conceptual approval, but our staff is recommending that we hold back on that while we negotiate just literally one more point that's outstanding in the government services agreement. So I'll segue to the government services agreement for a minute. The nexus of the GSA is the fact that Tesla gets the sales and use tax abatements that I mentioned, but they also get property tax abatements for the first 10 years. They also bring a unique set of demands on us that poses with challenges of providing government services out there, not only to Tesla, but admittingly to others as well. They're going to have a larger number of construction workers than any other project, and conceivably or hopefully by the time they're in full production, they will certainly have a large number of employees out there as well. That impacts us in sheriff services, in our assessor's office, in emergency management to some degree, but most definitely it impacts us and makes it glaringly obvious that we need to get staffed back up to some level for fire and EMS services out at Station 75 in the tri-area. So we're working through the mechanics of the GSA with Tesla, asking them to help compensate us for providing those services. And I would probably look at both Alec and at Bob and say, you know, there have to have been 100, if not 200 or 250 points that we have negotiated over the past several months. And we're down to just one small one at the moment. So things are going along very well. We're just not quite there. We hope to be there on May 18th. So staff is prepared also to recommend continuation of the GSA, item 13, and the ordinance, item 14, item ordinance 15263, to a date and time specific of May 18th, 10 a.m. here at the Story County Courthouse. So that's kind of a long-winded overall version. If you want to hear items 11 and 12, I can provide any additional input, or you can ask questions, if you wish, of either Mr. Olson or Mr. Leith. The public would certainly have their opportunity to discuss, and Mr. Morris and I are both recommending that on continuing item 13 and 14, we still allow for public comment since this was published as a hearing, and the GSA in particular is an item of significant substance to the county, so we'd encourage that you allow public comment on those too.
Very good. Thank you.
Did I miss anything?
Nope.
So let's go back and move back to items number 11, where we started out. This is the discussion possible action to approve a cooperative agreement with the State of Nevada Department of Taxation. It's already been explained. We'll take public comment on this right now. If you'd like to, anyone in the audience like to speak on this? Okay. I think Mr. Whitwood did a pretty good job of explaining how this all comes to be. So, hearing no comment, I'll look for a motion to approve item number 11.
I'll make a motion to approve a cooperative agreement with the State of Nevada Department of Taxation specifying the dates and procedure for distribution to Story County of the Economic Diversification District Number 1 revenues pledged pursuant to Ordinance
adjourned. I'll second your motion. Then move in second to approve item 11. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion carries. Moving along now to item number 12. This is to approve the reimbursement agreement for Story County Economic Diversification District Number 1 between Story County and Tesla. At this time, we're open to go ahead and take public comment on this as well. Anyone in the audience like to speak on this? Once again, Mr. Witten, thank you. It's a very good explanation on how all this comes to work. And at this time, I'm looking for a motion for approval of item number 12.
I'll make a motion to approve the reimbursement agreement for Story County Economic Diversification District Number 1 between Story County and Tesla.
And I'll second your motion. The move is second to approve item 12. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and the motion carries. All right. Moving along now to item number 13. This is the approve the governmental services agreement for Story County Economic Diversification District Number 1 between Story County Fire Protection District, and Tesla. As been pointed out by Mr. Witten, we're going to continue this, but we'll still go ahead and open this up for discussion. So if anybody would, Ms. Bart, come on up.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. I just have a question. The governmental services agreement, have we seen this before in here?
No. This is its publication in the package on Thursday was the first time that document was presented to either the commission or to you, except with the exception of Commissioner McBride, Chairman McBride, who did participate in the negotiations.
Okay. Will this warrant a second reading, or is today the day and you approve it?
Well, today's the day. Staff's going to recommend it be continued because we're still negotiating.
Okay.
It does not require a second reading because it is an agreement, not a not an ordinance.
Okay.
But we're going to recommend continuations to finalize negotiations.
All right. That's good. So I will take the answer to this next question after the next agenda item. I would like to understand how this and the fee schedule that's in here is different than the next document, the ordinance that is here for the second reading, 15-263, and that table of fees, because this second document here, that the 15-263, we have seen before, and I have come up and asked, is this money being paid to us by Tesla? Is this revenue to us? Is this a reimbursement to us? And yet, and the answers have all been yes, and then I see this document. So I'm confused as to, are we getting double-dipped? Does this replace this? What's the difference? Because the second document is what I've been asking questions on in terms of what is being mitigated in terms of our costs. And you've always said it's these numbers. So I'll take that answer
If you'd allow me to, I think I can answer
now. Okay.
Because it's a very good question and plays to the fact that I said these are very complex structures. And they're complex in some ways because the state in the crafting of SB 1 said you have to do this way, but over here you got to do something completely different. So I'll start, and if I haven't answered your question, as you're very good at, make sure you keep me on and don't start the clock, please, or stop the clock or whatever, because it's a great question. They are two separate distinct fees or monies that Tesla will be paying us. SB 1 said that as far as if the county's willing to abate in whole or in part any of our plan review and permitting fees, it has to be structured through an ordinance.
Right.
So therefore, the ordinance deals only with the services that we provide in regard to thousands and thousands of pages of plan review that guys like Fritz Klingler and Dean Haymore and Patty go over and then go out and inspect. That's all 15-263 deals with, and it deals with that because the legislature said if you're going to abate them, you have to abate them via an ordinance. Okay, so that's monies that they will be paying us over the years, including retroactive, once approved, back to July 1 of 2014, because, hey, we've been out there working our tails off through Fritz, through Dean, through others, Patty, since about June last year. So that's the ordinance.
Okay.
The GSA is a totally different set of fees that we're asking Tesla to pay us. Okay. The working parts of the GSA don't deal with plan review or permitting. Those are covered in the ordinance. So think of it as if they deal with everything else. The sheriff's going to need more deputies over time. Tesla's going to help pay for that. The assessor needed to increase staff already and increase its outside assessor contract services. Tesla will be helping pay for that. Emergency management through its hazardous materials will also have needed some extra help. Tesla's helping to pay toward that. And the big one, Nicole, is we've been, frankly, limping along for a few years as the activity in the park overall has started to pick up. And we're noticing, particularly with the coming of Tesla, particularly with the construction workers right now, but also, quite honestly, with other operations in the park, we can no longer afford not to have our fire station staffed there. Mm-hmm. So we're asking Tesla, through that GSA agreement, to shoulder a very heavy share of that. In fact, quite frankly, 100% for the first 3 years, while the park hopefully picks up and goes through a growth phase. So fire services predominantly in the GSA, fire and plan review permitting in the ordinance. They are not, one doesn't wipe out the other. They are both monies we're asking for.
So they're cumulative. So in rough math here, if I compare the two charts, in 2017, we would be receiving about $1.4 million, about the same amount, plus or minus. In 17 and 18, same thing, $1.6 million.
That sounds about right.
About, yes. In large numbers. So let me see if I get this straight. They're in the district. They collect sales and the taxes. That gets paid to the Department of Taxation that then pays it back to us. We give that money back to Tesla.
Yes and no. A lot of it is flat out abated at the point of sale.
Okay.
And I'll look to Mr. Olson for this, but a lot of it can be abated and will never be paid. It is about 2.75%, as I recall, that cannot be abated that fashion. That portion is remitted to the state, just like the bucket of blood does or any place else.
But I'm just saying it does a complete, you know, all three bases back to home.
It's a pass-through.
And then, as a function of these two, they then pay us again these fees that we keep, correct?
In lieu of none of that payment, that's why we're asking to help, and in lieu of zero payment on property taxes for 10 years. And the reason why these documents are crafted for 10 and 9 years is exactly that. We won't see sales and use tax on this for 20 years. We know that. That's a fact. But I will tell you, go to page, I think it's 17 or 18 of the Governor's Office of Economic Development, that report, that analyst report that they did. I think we calced out in the year that expires, the full year, the county will see about $28 million in property taxes alone just from Tesla, and the school district will see $13 million.
And are either of these tied, for example, if Tesla shutters the factory, if Tesla slows things down considerably, it's not going to go bankrupt necessarily, but is any of this contingent on any progress on their build-out or progress on the revenues of their factory, or come hell or high water, whether they fill their factory or shutter it, they're obligated to pay this, because I don't see an out for them in here, except for bankruptcy, which you can shutter a factory and not go bankrupt. So are these guaranteed, regardless of what the business climate for Tesla is, short of bankruptcy?
Yes and no is the answer to that question. Their performance under the terms of Senate Bill 1, and I'd be looking to Mr. Leith to either nod his head or chime in, under Senate Bill 1, as well as the applications they made to the state of Nevada through the Governor's Office of Economic Development, have what are typically known as clawback agreements. Those clawback agreements state that they have certain performance benchmarks that they have to do, the number of employees that are Nevada residents, the amount of the investment, which I believe is $3.5 billion. So there are clawbacks in there that protect both state and the county. I'm not going to address the advent of a bankruptcy of Tesla. They're a great company to work with. In my opinion, should something like that happen, probably not. We would not be guaranteed any amounts under.
But that language isn't in the contract, though, right?
That's correct. It is not. And the reality of it is, if that were to happen, let's say in year six, pick an arbitrary number, and I'm not forecasting anything, we would no longer have to do plan reviews or permitting. Things would stop. So it would be appropriate, I would think, not to expect money if there was no activity going on. And then relative to the payment for services out there, if they're no longer operating out there, it would be appropriate in my mind not to expect any money from them as well.
Okay, but we would get money owed us, because I don't see that. If God forbid, markets change, which they do, products change, which they do, climate changes, which it does, if, God forbid, in 3 years they have to shutter and they don't have to pay anything because they're not generating sales tax, et cetera, but we've already put out money for certain things, will that clawback by the state reimburse us for expenses we've already expended on their behalf, but they're no longer going to be here? It's a disaster scenario, but you have to think about it. That's all. Been there.
I would tell you no, but the only expenses we make, if you look at the terms of both agreements, the ordinance and the GSA, they provide for either payment annually in advance or payment quarterly in advance.
So we would owe them.
So we would be okay. Ahead of the game at that time.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Would anyone else like to ask any questions? Testify?
I'd ask if Mr. Leith or Mr. Olson have anything that they'd like to add. So that's the GSA, and staff would recommend it.
I think one clarification on one of the questions Ms. Barton mentioned is taxes on revenue. There will be no taxes on revenue out there.
No.
There's no sales tax. So there's no revenue collection on sales.
So staff would recommend continuation.
Before we go to that, I want to go ahead and approve item 12, okay?
Oh, excuse me. I apologize.
So it's not a motion to approve item number 12.
We already have, sir.
We did?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Pardon me.
So staff recommends continuation of item 13, the government services agreement, to the May 18th meeting, which is a Monday, 10 a.m. Here in the district courtroom.
Okay. Well, I get what it is. I'd ask for discussion on item 13. Now I can ask if there's any discussion on item 14, since I think everything is pretty well hammered out there.
Why don't you go ahead and continue?
Let's continue 13.
13, okay. And then
we'll open 14. 14.
Okay. Mr. Gagney, looking for a motion to continue item number 13 to the.
I make a motion to continue item 13. May 18th, and that is to review the approval of the government service agreement for county economic diversification district number one between Story County Fire Protection District and Tesla.
Very good. And I'll second your motion and move the second to continue item 13 to May the 18th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion carries. Move along now to item number 14. Once again, I'll ask if anybody has any testimony or questions on item 14. Hearing yeah. None, I'll look for a motion to continue this to May the 18th.
I'll make a motion to continue item 14 to the May 18th for the approval of to approve the second reading of 15-263. Excuse me. Having section 3.50.200 to the Story County Code providing for a private project creating portal. Statements from permitted fees and participants in the qualified project in the Economic Diversification District Number 1 and providing for the other property related matters.
Very good. I'll second your motion. We moved and second to approve item number 14. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion carries. Okay.
And I might add before you move on that Mr. Leith and Mr. Olson has asked, if their attendance is required to sit through the rest of this meeting, or could they go enjoy a little bit of Mr. Leith's favorite town? So they're going to go walk the streets and spend some money.
Thank you. Great. Thanks for your attendance today.
I appreciate it.
See you on the 18th.
All right, everyone. We're going to move along now to item number 15. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. The committee and staff reports. Ms. Chapman, do you have anything today?
Nothing
today. Okay. Ms. Nevin?
Nothing to report today. Thank you.
Mr. Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple things I wanted to provide this board, as well as the public, an update on the State Route 342 down at the bottom of Gold Hill. I've gone down there in the last week and noticed that Comstock has done a substantial amount of backfilling in that area, and Mr. Joe Cooper from Comstock gave me an update this morning that backfilling is up to about 2 feet of the prior surface. They are almost finished. I can attest, watching in front of my house, all of the trucks from
Cruise
Construction have been going down. They're setting up. They are the contract of record that will be rebuilding the road. They'll be doing the base, the paving, the railing. There will be some guard railing put in there per NDOT requirements and the striping, and we'll be getting that done. And apparently May 11th is the day that Cruise will actually begin repaving that portion of the road and getting it set back up. And so NDOT's in the interim right now completing plan review for the road that's going in down there. Comstock has submitted its plans, and there's a couple little things that normally happen as far as extra documents, etc. But that is just moving along and seems to be fine. And then just a relation to what's going on in the area for the Odyssey run, the Odyssey has chosen that they would rather just go ahead and use the trunk route this year. They're not going to worry about whether they go up that road or whether the road's done or not. So that'll be going up the trunk route. Phase 2 is still what it is. Once again, Phase 1, by the way, the anticipation date is still going to be June 6th. That's still on track to happen as it's planned. Phase 2 is that portion of the road that will be worked on while Phase 1 is completed and people are driving on Phase 1. And that is still moving along as planned, but I'm in communication, as well as Comstock is, with the Army Corps of Engineers and SHPO. SHPO seems to be right on track and ready to go with no problems, and the Army Corps is just about there, too. But they're going through all the plans and requesting documents, that sort of thing. Last but not least, the reclamation per the SUP for the mine. The reclamation under the special use is required to go beyond NDEP requirements. Comstock Mining is required then to bond for whatever is necessary to bring the entire pit under control, and that is moving along very well. In fact, Far West has completed its validation that Comstock Mining's reclamation plan and the $1.5 million that Comstock Mining put up in the assessor's office for a bond is valid. They've completed the validation, and they believe that $500,000 is necessary, not $1.5 million that's bonded. Comstock came back afterward and said they'll go ahead and just leave the $1.5 million bonded regardless of that report as the extra money. So that is completed and done and validated. And that's it.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Austin. From Emergency Management, Joe Curtis, do you have something today?
Yes, sir. Just one quick item. We have another item on the agenda.
Well, when you're in the audience, we know you have something.
Oh, thanks. Joe Curtis, Emergency Management, for the record. Just to advise you that, because it wasn't in your packet, but County Manager Witten had me appointed to a Homeland Security Working Group, which is a working group that consists of about 30 members from around the state of emergency managers that reviews and approves grants submitted for Homeland Security funding. The state gets around between $4 and $6 million a year for Homeland Security projects. So the beauty of that particular process is that I've learned that we may have some options for into next year for some pretty substantial grants that may help us in some of the areas relating to maybe communications and that sort of thing. So it's given us some options there. That's all I have.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gallagher, do we have anything out of the comptroller's office today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. We got an award last week at the annual pool, Nevada Public Agency Investment Pool and PAC meeting. We got an award, and it said, presented to Story County in recognition of completion of the Loss Control Excellence Program for 2015. This has been a required work, or the required child of Pat Whitten for quite a while, and it engulfs a lot of stuff. With that is, of course, our risk management team, our fire department, public works with all the signage and stuff that Mike Nevin has to go, emergency management with Joe and Sherry, and particularly our safety committee, which has been one of Pat's primary concerns and work efforts for many, many years, which has turned out to be excellent. With this, we get a check for $7,500, and if we keep it up through our risk management efforts and whatever, we'll get an annual kind of stipend of about $3,500 for our efforts. Great program. Learned a lot about whatever their sessions are or what their sessions are all about. Learned about the various tiering of how they insure our county, along with almost every other county and school district, with the exception of Carson, Washoe, and Clark, who are self-insured. Something I wouldn't recommend at this time under this umbrella. Anyway, there was a couple of things that they mentioned, and the one that really caught Vanessa Stevens and I mind's eye was related to cybersecurity and the fact that there is so much of this going on now. You cannot believe it. The gentleman that was speaking was from Washington, D.C., who was part of the cyber task force for the federal government, understanding that there is a tremendous amount of exposure that we have out there. For example, for financial institutions itself, there's about 15 million cardholders have been compromised. 15 million through. And so far this year, 102 million breaches for the year to date. Breaches into systems, into financial institutions. So it begs the question, you know, of course we already know what kind of information they would want. Socials, anything that names, addresses, whatever. They take these, they file false income tax returns, they get the refund, and then the person is sits there forever. Equity Trust, for example, had about 3,700 records compromised and stolen. TD Bank, wherever that is, had about 46,000 records stolen. This is a big business for a lot of people. Asked if this was a very sophisticated system, or a very sophisticated bunch of individuals, he said no. It's very unsophisticated because the methods by which people use their computers now make them suspect to whatever. They don't need to get into your system. They'll do it either through email or whatever. They've got a link. They start grabbing information from whatever. They expand it. They hide things within their system, and then all of a sudden your system's compromised. Businesses, of course, we all know about Home Depot and Target. This is what happened. And there's more that haven't told anybody probably about it. Education, for example, Auburn University has had 364,000 records compromised. I mean, why educational institutions? There's all kinds of reasons. Again, they're easy. It can be easy to get into. You've got socials. You've got people's grades. You've got backgrounds. You've got families. You've got all kinds of things. Things in the future, obviously, Wells Fargo, along with B of A, a lot of those people are changing their cards off from the magstripe to, they call chip. It's actually a smart card. The reason that this hasn't been gone out is they've been compromised. They have, you know, all of their test programs. They are not ready to get it out yet, to really, because they've got bugs in them. Because the smart chip now can be compromised for these people. Utility smart meters, for example, was one of their examples, and there have been instances where the utility company, during the period of time from 9 o'clock at night to 2 o'clock in the morning, has automatically raised your heating rate. So if you had it set for 70 degrees and you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning at 74, somebody's swimming around with your smart meter. A lot of stuff is extracted from there that they can't, and it's just people have logged into systems, have gotten into things, some of them from internally within the utility company, some from outside. And then they talked about a little what they call ransomware. Ransomware is something that you get on your screen, and it, to their term, is you click and you're pregnant. At that time, you're done. You'll get a deal says that we've got your records. It's going to cost you X number of dollars to sign up for this deal, to this deal, to retrieve your records and whatever for businesses or personal and whatever. You may or may not get it, but your payment is through a secret secure site that cannot be traced, some either debit cards or whatever sent to some place. They can't track them for the most part right now. But if you decline not to do that, then your system goes. And if you haven't backed up your system, and this is where the problem is, if you haven't backed up your system, then you now have to recreate for a period of 6 to 9 to 12 months. Now, where I'm coming from, and for a comptroller's office, that's an unbelievable task, because you almost have to go manual at that point in time. So the system... I would call it terrorism is very active, very real. Anybody has a Yahoo account, they're almost compromised on a daily basis. So it was very, very interesting. We try and do, and I know James does an excellent job of trying to do that. We're going to do some more education on what we do as far as what we're exposed to. Our ADS system is by a third-party administrator, so I don't have really that problem, because it's all hard-coded and they can't go in there and grab stuff. But even who knows about that? I mean, if they've got access into our system, into our network, what is the next step into going into and trying to compromise records for, let's say, payroll records or whatever within a third-party dedicated system? So something that we'll be speaking about, and hopefully we can get an answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Who do we have representing the fire district today? Is going to be...
I'm not there
to
Patty
either?
you'll have to wait, Patty, on that one. Sorry. It's on agenda. I'm assuming you want to go ahead and hear the wildland fire, right?
Can we get it?
No, we got to wait. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I botched that one earlier. You got an apology coming from the chief through me.
Okay.
Sheriff Antonero?
Nothing today.
Mr. Whitman?
Did you get Sherry?
Yeah.
Okay, I missed that. A couple of quick things. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One is I've been asked by multiple commissioners to try to find a way to shorten our quarterly over budget variance discussion that we had at the last meeting. Mr. Gallagher and I are committed to do that, and we'll keep you guys posted. Probably what it'll take the flavor of is, first off, we'll focus on the more recently occurring things, rather than if we paid 100% of a payment the first quarter. We don't need to keep telling you guys that every quarter. Today I mentioned to staff that probably everybody except for Mike and Gary will get 2 whole minutes to go over They're significant items. And Mike and Gary will get 4 minutes, count them 4 minutes, because they have so many funds, and that's the only reason why they get four. So we're going to try to speed that one along. With the approval of your consent agenda, I want to point out that you have moved the next two meeting dates from Tuesdays to Mondays. The May 18th date is actually in conjunction with state statute that currently says we have to approve our final budget on the third Monday in May. So we're having our regular meeting on that date at the same time. And then you also approved moving the meeting from June 2nd to June 1st. That is because there's currently a civil trial scheduled to begin here on June 2nd, so the courtroom's not available. And rather than move it to an off-site location where we don't have the recording systems and everything, we've opted to recommend moving that to June 1st. I want to thank Mr. Gallagher for attending and Vanessa for attending the Pool Pack annual meeting. I was in final negotiations with Tesla throughout those 2 days, and Hugh running and taking the load with that was a huge help. And then I didn't want to say this while representatives from Tesla were necessarily here or not. We're certainly, you know, making progress and getting along well, but there's somebody I want to point out is just invaluable to me, and that's Bob Morris. Bob has been there every minute of every day, every time I've needed him. I've gotten stuff back at 10 o'clock at night and on a Sunday morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. So, and that's through some significant family health issues for a little while that plagued him. But he's been there, and I couldn't have done it without him. And I also deeply appreciate my friend, Chairman Marshall McBride, who has been there and has been open to creative solutions and proposals. So I'm very grateful, especially to Bob, for that, Bob. So, and for Ann for making Bob available. So that's it, sir.
Thank you. D.A. Langer. Special counsel, Morris. Madam Clerk, nothing today.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Is there an update on this legislation?
Is that coming up next? I think so.
As a matter of fact, right after board comments.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I miss anybody? I have not. Okay, we're going to move along now to item number 16, board comment. No action and no public comment. Commissioner Bergetti?
I guess I had more questions than answers. I was wondering what first I'd like to congratulate Pat for helping get that award that you brought up to the podium. As my past life with the county, that was one of the things that Pat was pretty insistent on, is we had somebody dedicated to the safety committee, and he was adamant. He was a little upset that the attendance started slacking, and so he was on it all the time, and I appreciate that, and that's why we got a war. Thank you.
Thank you.
My other questions are what's our zip code update? What's the update on it? You know, we're trying to get another zip code in our county. And so I guess I just want to know about that along with the legislation.
And if I may answer that, Mr. Chair,
go right ahead.
The zip code is inching its way along. It's a continual process. I think, as you know, we engaged in the services of retired Congressman, U.S. Congressman John Porter. John's team, himself and Dan Maurer, are definitely on this, working it. As far as we've gotten so far is a directive from the Washington, D.C. postal gurus back through Congressman Amade's office to have me speak to a particular lady in Las Vegas. I did. I hit exactly the bureaucracy that, you know, I thought I would. relative to the fact that the consideration that it helps our revenue is of no interest to the U.S. Post Office. It has to be geared toward streamlining their deliveries, but I'm welcome to go ahead and write a letter to the state director anyway, which I'm in the process of doing. I'm not going to say never on this thing, because as long as I'm working here, I'm never going to quit on it, but it's a very, very slow process. And legislation, will, if you don't mind, we'll get to next on the agenda.
The zip code is, we've talked before, is that a sales space again? But at least this time around, we're docking anything.
Correct.
That was the problem. We've been trying for a long time, but we never really kept it any documentation separated from that. So this time we're trying to do it the right way, and hopefully. Now, would it be wise to put it on the agenda as a continuing item, or so that we address it?
How about on the first meeting of every month? That way, monthly, we're looking at updates. Would that be okay with you?
Yeah, that would be okay.
Can you make that happen?
Great. Is that all, Mr.? I have nothing today. So at this time, we'll move on to item number 17. It's discussion only. No action. No public comment. This is right along where we're talking about the where we've set with the with bills that are in the legislature. We've only got about 4 weeks left now. A lot of bills are dead. Some are hanging on. Some did pass. So why don't you give us an update on what's pertinent to Story County right now?
Certainly, and I'll rely on you. And if you knows any updates that I don't, we're a little out of sync. What happens is that every other Friday we meet as all four counties, or Carson City and three counties, with Mary Walker and Steve Walker. And so this information is a little bit old, and I don't have specific bill-by-bill items to go through. As I recall, the elements of note when we talked a week ago this past Friday were, as Chairman McBride mentioned, an awful lot of bills have died. They failed to get out of their chamber of origin on that deadline, which is something like April 22nd, whatever the Friday was near there. But there were an awful lot of exemptions hung on bills. So the ones that come to note right now, and I can give everybody the numbers, I apologize. There are still a number of collective bargaining bills that are being either consolidated, moved together, and held as a strategy, if you will, in part to negotiate with which revenue increase plan may or may not be acceptable, whether it's Governor Sandoval's business license fee, whether it's Assemblyman Kerner and the Assembly's tax structure on the modified business tax. There's hybrids being proposed of those two. And then Chairman McBride and I had the opportunity to meet with the state comptroller, Ron Connect, as well as briefly Assemblyman Wheeler, our Assemblyman, on yet another package that has not even been assigned a bill number but could be substituted in possibly. The other bills we're watching, we did a fiscal impact note on 433. I think on what is SB 433, that's expanding the hours of early voting radically, like 14 straight days, I think, or something close to that, and extended hours in the evening beyond the 6 o'clock that we already do, and the fiscal impact is pretty straightforward. Vanessa provided it to me to put on the bill. It's about $7,000 every election just in overtime to have people here to staff. And when Vanessa did the analysis for what it would do for our turnout, you know, it's minimal and not worth that. So we're following that one. SB 170 is a bill I'm very interested in, and it's languishing right now in the Assembly. It passed the Senate 21 zip, but it's hitting a little bit of a bumpy road with minority leader Kirkpatrick, and that is the data center bill. It takes the standard abatements and incentives that are out there right now versus the Tesla abatements, which are the granddaddy of all abatements. And it kind of finds a middle ground. The good news is we would still get 100% of our property taxes. There's no provisions currently to abate in whole or in part plan review and permitting fees. Sales tax has a much heavier abatement than the standard one, but it's not 100% at least. And that's because these servers that go in and out of these data centers are, they typically have a lifespan of about 18 to 24 months. So we're following SB 170, and hopefully it will pass, because if it doesn't, probably projects like Switch and others that we're currently working with may not occur. They'll go wherever else they can get a better package of incentives. So I mentioned collective bargaining, PERS. There are a number of bills, same situation, that are being consolidated and or looked at and held together through committee and are being used as leverage, I guess, for the, for which revenue structure ultimately comes out. Prevailing wage, that as well, similar story. Mike did go down. I want to thank Mike Nevin, who's not here, but Mike went down, I think it was last Friday, and participated with a caucus meeting that explained somebody in their infinite wisdom, I think it was Skip Daly, who's a retired Assembly Democrat out of at Reno. They wanted local governments to start paying sales tax on construction materials and stuff like that. That's looking favorable last I knew. And like I said, unfortunately, when your information is as old as 12 days or whatever we're into, our next meeting is this coming Friday. I don't have a whole lot else. Yeah, I defer to Marshall, but if you have any specific bills, I can check the status either here right now or let you know.
Well, they haven't passed a lot of legislation in the last 2 weeks either.
No, and
they've been having a lot of meetings, but they haven't passed anything.
Yeah, a lot of floor meetings as a whole. And that begs, I'm glad you pointed it out because I meant to say this, an awful lot of the self-imposed logjam, if you will, that they created should have lifted last Friday. They, being the state, publishes their economic revenue forecast early, usually in conjunction either with the governor's budget or right in there, as I recall. But then the economic forum has to meet, I think it's the first Friday in May, and they met last Friday and released their updates. There were a few revenue drops, a few updates relative to the sunset taxes, but now the numbers are there that will allow them to continue to make forward progress on can we afford to do this or can we not, based on the governor's expense proposals. So that economic forum was a huge item, and bills should start moving well now. The question is whether or not we're going to have a tax plan or not before the end of the session, in order to avoid a special session, which I believe the cost on that's about $25,000 a day.
Okay.
So Jack, if there's any specifics, I can certainly get them for you.
Have you heard anything about the SB 415? That's the commissioners can raise taxes by 5 cents or anything like that.
Raise taxes?
Yeah.
No, sir.
They can raise it 0.5 cents above the existing rate.
On property tax?
All I got was we can raise taxes.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I don't think it got anywhere.
Yeah, I recall something that I saw in there, but may I have the bill number again, please?
SD 415.
Okay. I will make sure it's on the list for Friday. And when we meet with Mary and Steve, I'll get back to you, sir.
And those have been following the governor's budget and the economic forum. State economic forum, I think they came in at a $6.3 billion anticipated revenue for the next biennium. And that's $1.1 billion shy of what the governor's proposed budget is. So,
anything else? Any other bills, Commissioner Montgomery?
How about the governor's one-stop shop for business license?
That is one we're following. Thank you. That's also known as the Silver Flume or the Portal Bill. That supposedly got modified to make it an opt-in. We can choose to go in or not. And as I think I've mentioned before, we have significant concerns with that because we are not convinced that the state can help us collect other monies due like we do when we're renewing business taxes.
I don't know what it's worth. I have a friend that works in the legislature. She's been there. In fact, she's going to retire this year, but she doesn't think it's going to go away anymore.
Yeah, we went to a breakfast with Northern Nevada Development Authority, and Secretary of State Sagaski was doing a pretty hard sales pitch on, you know, how good it is. And it does look good to the business community. I'll admit that, you know, to be able to get one permit in place, but it's flawed significantly and always has been, in my opinion. Anything else, sir?
No.
Okay. Marshall, did I miss anything?
That's it. Okay. We're good. All right. Let's move along now to item number 18, discussion of possible action. Approve the interlocal contract for temporary housing of juveniles at the Murphy Bernardini Juvenile Detention Center.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to lead off here and introduce a man, but give a little preamble first. Ben Bianchi is the head of juvenile services for the Carson City operation. The county uses his facility and his services, and Ben's lucky. He's a good guy. He's been around for a long time. I can actually say we shared an office when I was county sheriff because he'd come in, work with the kids, you know, and I'd go out somewhere and have a good time while he was working. But Ben and the Carson City manager, Nick, came to me about a month ago and said, "You're going to be really irritated with us, but, you know, we've got problems in the juvenile facility, and the judges have pretty much said, you know, fix it." And so across the board, unilaterally, everyone knows or will know if you've read the staff report, our fees for service have to go up. They have to go up because the center has to be viable, and they have to go up because two district court judges pretty much said, fix it. So I ask you all not to shoot the messenger. I'm sure Ben would be much rather down working with the kids still. I do want to point out, though, and I want to thank Ben and also the Carson City District Attorney's Office. One thing I had forgotten to do as we were looking at this interlocal agreement, it was developed by the Carson City DA's office, is I had forgotten to involve our own counsel in a review of this. And so finally, at the last minute, I fired it off to Keith Loomis, who, again, is a rock star in my mind. And there were a couple of provisions not in there, for the most part, that he thought prudent. So if you want to take a look at the contract that has been provided, there are a few legalese changes and legalese only. They do not materially change anything. If I thought I could have gotten away with it, I would have dropped the fee of $350 down to about, you know, $75 or something, but I figure Ben would have caught that. Section 8 of the agreement that ended with there was a hold harmless in there where Story would hold Carson City harmless, but there was no reciprocal provision where Carson City would hold us as well. That's been inserted in there, and there are copies available in somewhere out there. Section 10, similar situation. The existing wording or the wording in the packet said the agency, including the agency juveniles, employee agent, or representatives of the agency shall not be considered an employee or representative or agent of Carson City. We put the same thing in there, reciprocal. And lastly, on item number 23, there is a provision that these can be increased, but they can be increased only by having 30-day after 30-day notice. So those are the three. I want to thank Keith, and I don't know if I missed anything or misstated anything. And with that, Mr. Bianchi will share with you his vast knowledge of juvenile services.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman. Ben Bianchi, Juvenile Services Chief. And I must say, Pat did an excellent job and probably makes my position on this a lot easier this morning. But I wanted you to be aware that I am very conscious that we're going from, or what I'm going to be doing on Thursday down in Carson City is asking the Board of Supervisors to approve the contract from going to from 125 to 350. And the way that rolled out, I'm a relatively new administrator, and I took a look at the overall detention budget and looked at the costs that we've been charging communities. We're an overflow agency for a lot of jurisdictions, mainly Lyon County, but Story County is the one jurisdiction that doesn't have a contract with another juvenile detention center. But we do, like I said, contract with other communities when they don't have enough beds in the other jurisdictions. But I looked at the overall fees and did simple math, and our current rate of $125 per day isn't even close to actual cost. So the reality is Carson City's been subsidizing the detention of youth for other jurisdictions. I did the math. For years 13-14, the actual cost was $530 a day. 12-13, $529. 11-12, $461. We're a 16-bed facility. There's 15 full-time staff, including a deputy chief. And there's a high liability and a lot of oversight into ratios. And bottom line is there's a lot of cost to run in a juvenile detention center. If we were at capacity 365 days a year, meaning 16 beds full, and we did the math on that, it would be actual cost of $254. That isn't reasonable or feasible because it's a co-ed facility and that population is transient. So the numbers fluctuate. As a department, our goal is to keep kids in custody the least amount of time possible. But as Ann knows from working in the juvenile court, we come up with situations where it's been determined that the child is too much of a risk to himself or the community, and we got to go through the court process. We got to get insurances in place and placements in place. And sometimes kids are in custody for 30, 60 days. And I think Story County had a couple of those cases this past year. Historically, the last few years, I mean in 11-12, Story County had 12 bed days for the calendar year. 12-13, one bed day. And then in 13-14, 165. And so far this year, as of April, was 123 bed days. So in planning, it's hard to foresee who's going to be passing through our doors and what agency it is. So I think it's fair. Well, to back up, once I took a look at this, I did take it to the district court judges who are my boss, and they said, we need to fix this, and that's why we're going to the board on Thursday in Carson City. So, and to go along with that, I think it's great that the Story County District Attorney took a closer look at the contract, because that really probably hasn't been modified in 30 years. So I think the version that's going to go to the board protects Story County better than it did in the past. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Is there any way, I thought that language that was going to be added to maybe have the parents pay part of it, the first 4 days or whatever?
I don't know we were going to actually modify this agreement, but I think that's a very good question that we did not have an answer to. Are we able to, or are you able to, seek some level of compensation from the parents of the minors?
Down in Carson City, what we do, and I believe it's supported by state law, and Ann would have to dig into the statute a little bit, but my understanding is the county or city that is detaining the child, they have the ability to bill the parents for up to 3 days of their detention or to the time of the detention hearing. There's no bail in juvenile cases. So if you were to get it, at least in Carson, if we get a child before the magistrate in the first day and the court detains the child, then we bill the family for 1 day. So once they become detained on court order, the county picks up the tab. And I don't know, like I said, in Carson, we bill out at $30 a day. I know Washoe County bills at $25, and I don't know if that's specified by statute.
It's not.
Okay.
I think it's a policy decision in each jurisdiction that the 3 day or after the detention hearing that is by statute. So you have up to 3 days at the time of the detention hearing.
And I think I'd like to just take a second to just speak to the detention center that we operate. I mean, the facility's 30 years old, and I'd welcome you to come down and visit it. You know, go through me. I'd be happy to give you a tour of the program. The kids are very well cared for. It's not a jail. The philosophy or the mission statement of the Juvenile Detention Center is a home-like atmosphere. And the staff we have there nurture these kids, they love these kids, and they take them through a very structured, supportive day.
The numbers he put out kind of coincide when we got a new deputy district attorney 4 years ago. Incarceration time.
And, you know, I can speak to that. I mean, I've been up on the Hill for 18 years now, and back in the day, we had a significant higher number of caseload children up here. At times, I would have 20 kids on caseload in the Story County area. So it has decreased significantly. It appears that it spiked these past 2 years, but really those numbers are well below what they used to be.
Any other questions? Anyone in the audience have any questions or discussion on this? Hearing none, call for a motion to approve the interlocal contract.
I'll make a motion to approve the interlocal contract for temporary housing of juveniles at the Murphy Bernardini Juvenile Detention Center, which would increase the detention fees at such facility from $125 to $350 per day per juvenile.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve item 18. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Clarification, the person's name was not Murphy Bernardini. It was Dan Murphy and Butch Bernardini. I knew them personally as a juvenile. I had a personal relationship with both of those gentlemen. And, everything worked out just fine.
In the
I never said anything about that. I just said I had a personal relationship with him.
And if I could just ask Ben, and I know he will, if Carson approves anything other than this, $350 is across the board for all jurisdictions, correct?
Correct.
So I just ask if any other jurisdiction gets any lower than $350, I'd like to sit and talk with you on that, okay?
Yes, and just for the record, we're hoping to enter some kind of agreement with Douglas County. They currently operate their own facility. And what there's a proposition or proposal possibly coming down where there will be a lesser cost because they are going to contract for a certain amount of beds, so it's upfront money. And I'm sure Story County, ever wanted to look at something like that, Nick and myself would be glad to look at it. But that would be tying you into that case whether you use them or not.
Okay. We can talk.
Thanks, Ben. All right, moving along now to item number 19, discussion, possible action, approval of resolution 15-421, declaring May 2015 as Wildfire Awareness Month in Story County.
I think Fritz, not sure Patty, and someone I have not met are going to come up, and I want to apologize to them on the way in. I was specifically asked if we could have moved this one up, so I don't know, maybe Mr. Klingler could go do a few things like inspections at Tesla or something like that, and I completely overlooked it, so I apologize.
Yeah. Good morning. For the record, Fritz Klingler with Story County Fire. I've got with me Patty Blakely, Story County Fire, and Sonia Sister with UNR Nevada Cooperative Extension. And we would like to request to declare the month of May Wildfire Awareness Month. And I think Story County is definitely a unique county, but we all share the same concern in this region within the Truckee Meadows, and that's wildfire and the threat of wildfire. And we just want to bring it out to the community and make people more aware. And we get a lot of help with Sonia with the UNR Cooperative Extension. She's really good about supplying us with information to deliver to the residents of Story County when we go do our 30-foot clearances. And when we're out there beating the street, I guess, in the park and stuff, and communicating with the public and that sort of thing, and being able to provide them with pamphlets and the information that we need to get out to the public. So Patty's going to read a short piece of the proclamation, and then I'm also going to have Sonia give a really quick presentation, and we'll be out of here.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is Story County Resolution 15-421 is in support of Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month. for May 2015. And this is the document that we asked the commissioners to sign, so I thought I would read it. Whereas wildfire significantly impacts Nevada's environmental, economic, and social well-being, and whereas residents of Nevada's fire-prone communities need to accept responsibility for living in high fire hazard areas, and whereas residents must be encouraged to move the expectation from the expectation of being protected from wildfire to the understanding that they must be prepared to survive wildfire, and whereas to do so, they need to acquire the knowledge and the skills to prepare their homes to survive wildfire and take action before the wildfire occurs. Whereas residents that implement appropriate pre-fire activities improve the survivability of their homes during wildfire. Therefore, be it resolved that the Story County Board of County Commissioners supports the month of May 2015 as Nevada Wildfire Awareness Month, and this year's theme, Improve Your Odds, Prepare for Wildfire, as a means for education and a call for residents of Story County to take action and reduce the wildfire threat to their homes and help their community move towards becoming a fire-adapted community. Passed, approved, and adopted this fifth day of May 2015 by the Story County Board of County Commissioners. And that's the document.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, for letting me speak today. And also want to thank Story County Fire Department and Chief Haynes for supporting our efforts since we started this. It was 10 years ago that Cooperative Extension realized we are actually a little behind the curve and we're not holding a wildfire awareness event, which is different than fire prevention because wildfires, as we know, happen despite our best prevention efforts. And so 10 years ago, we pulled together all of our federal, state, and local firefighters, and Story County was right there from the beginning, and started with a week of wildfire awareness the first week of May. And it has since grown so much and expanded that we had to expand it to the whole month of May last year. So this is the second year we're doing that. And as a committee, we decided on this year's theme with a distinctly Nevada feel. The casino chips with the home on top and the fire looking at it with the Improve Your Odds, Prepare for Wildfire. And I would like to present all of you a deck of cards, also to go with the gambling theme. But they're unique in that they have a 13 different defensible space tips on them. So while you're playing cards, you could be learning something, little tip to make your home more fire safe this year. Got plenty for everyone in the audience, I think. May is really just the beginning of statewide efforts because we know wildfire doesn't just have a season anymore. It could happen any time. So we just continue this message throughout the year. And there are a few events that I just want to tell you all about. If you could participate on Saturday, we're holding a wildfire awareness race in Washoe Valley at Washoe Lake State Park. And I know Patty and Fritz are running in that with us, so that's great. You'll be represented. And then we have been invited to participate with Patty at the Hugh Gallagher Elementary School for a Wildfire Awareness Day, where the children will be learning about the dangers of embers, which is a big threat for all of Story County if a wildfire were to strike. And with that, I just want to thank you all, and if I may distribute some swag.
Well, thank you for coming today, Sonia. And I know we do a lot of different things with the Cooperative Extension at UNR.
Yes.
And that. So you guys have a lot of great programs down there.
Thank you.
Thank you for attending today.
Can we get a quick picture of Sonia with the two commissioners?
Sure.
They like to have.
Sure.
Yeah, Fritz and Harvey as well.
Sure.
Okay.
Marshall better hold up a deck of cards.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So this was a discussion item, so if anybody had any comments they wanted to make, anyone in the audience? Hearing none, at this time, Commissioner McGuffey, look for a motion to approve Resolution 15-2421.
I'll make a motion to approve, for the approval of Resolution 15-421, declare May 2015 as Wildfire Awareness Month.
I'll second your motion. That being said, it's been moved and second to approve item 19. Resolution 15-421. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And motion carries. Moving along now to item number 20. Discussion of possible action approval of Resolution 15-419, adoption of the Story County Hazard Mitigation Plan. Mr. Curtis.
I may have some personal recollection that accounts for some bedtime, though, Marsh, for you. that's why the things went down, because Marshall got out of school. Bernardini, yeah. Honorable Commissioners, County Manager Mr. Witten, Joe Curtis for the record here. I come before you this morning relative to the requirement that we have through the federal government, through the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and as a result of the Section 322 of the Robert T. Stafford Disaster Relief and Emergency Assistance Act. We in 2006, initially, after a year's worth of work with our local emergency planning committee, consisting of county officials and many members of the community, as well as members of the schools and of the industrial partners within the industrial complex, put together the Story County Emergency, or correction, the Story County Hazard Mitigation Plan. That is a requirement that we update or review and do whatever updates are necessary for that plan every 5 years. We have just completed that plan so that we are in compliance with this next review of that plan. And with that in mind, we have a requirement that we must have the commissioners pass a resolution that accepts that hazard mitigation plan. The funding for that mostly comes through the federal government and through the state to us, and they give us the assistance to produce the updates that are necessary. So we worked over the last year to get that update completed. The resolution and the plan itself was presented to you in your packets for review. It's a rather extensive plan, and of course what it covers is our five major concerns within the county, that being earthquake, wildland fire, as we've just talked about, flood, winter storms, and wind events. As we move forward, of course, earthquake is probably one of our biggest concerns along with wildland fire. I can read this resolution to you if you would like, or if it would be your wish to read it.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. Resolution number 15-419 states, whereas Story County has historically experienced severe damage from natural and human-caused hazards such as flooding, wildfire, drought, thunderstorms, high winds, and hazardous materials incidents on many occasions in the past century, resulting in loss of property and life, economic hardship, and threats to public health and safety. Whereas the Story County Hazard Mitigation Plan, known as the Plan, has been developed after more than 1 year of research and work by Story County Office of Emergency Management in association and cooperation with the Story County Planning Team for the reduction of hazard risk to the community. Whereas the plan specifically addresses hazard mitigation strategies and plan maintenance procedures for Story County. Whereas the plan recommends several hazard mitigation actions projects that will provide mitigation for specific natural and human-caused hazards that impact Story County with the effect of protecting people and property from loss associated with these hazards. Whereas a public meeting was held to present the plan for comment and review as required by law. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Story County Board of County Commissioners that, one, the plan is hereby adopted as an official plan of Story County. Two, the respective officials identified in the mitigation strategy of the plan are hereby directed to pursue implementation of the recommended actions assigned to them. Three, future revisions and plan maintenance required by the Disaster Mitigation Act of 2000 and FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, are hereby adopted as a part of this resolution for a period of 5 years from the date of this resolution. Four, an annual report on the progress of the implementation elements of the plan shall be presented to the Local Emergency Planning Commission by October 31st of each calendar year. Then that applies for the passage and the signatures as required by the commissioners. That's the extent of it, and we appreciate your consideration and moving forward with that resolution so that we may keep our friends and family at FEMA happy.
May I I'd just like to chime in. I want to draw your attention particularly to the second whereas, where we talk about developing this plan after more than a year of research and work by the Story County Office of Emergency Management. And I want everybody to keep perspective that Joe's a less than part-time employee that chooses to do this. His leadership through the Local Emergency Planning Committee, through getting critical documents like this done, and the fact that somewhere in that process, oh, by the way, we gave Sherry a major plate full of community services stuff, I think attests to the quality of his work and his part of the organization. This document, as I understand it, is essential because if we don't have this in place updated and identifying those hazards, then we have no vehicle to go out and ask for grants to help mitigate those that are available. So this serves as our base document that says, okay, FEMA, next, if we're going to mitigate something, be it Six Mile Canyon or back to the courthouse and earthquakes or whatever it may be, without this, it wouldn't be there. And I watched this process. I participated in part. I don't want to oversell that because I missed more meetings than I made, probably. But I think under Joe's leadership, this is as good and better document that you're going to see in any other local government in the state of Nevada and probably in the country. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for those kind words. And I have to give a great big thanks, of course, to the help from Sherry Nevin, who she and I have worked very closely together for a number of years now. I look to her for a lot of things. The Six Mile Canyon mitigation project is an example of one of the grants that we get to approve, in that case, improve the drainage down through Six Mile Canyon. That was a four-year project trying to get that thing together. The other thing is that there's so many other aspects of dealing with the emergency management that we have to do in order to be eligible for these various grants. It brings in a significant amount of money every year to the county for that. But it's enjoyable.
I think we'd also be remiss if we didn't recognize and thank individuals from the Nevada Department of Emergency Management.
Absolutely.
You know, they've helped provide the leadership and the structure and the templating and, you know, those types of things. And you know the people much better than I do, but they, in my opinion, have been exceptionally supportive and helpful in that.
Absolutely. They are a go-between us and FEMA on the federal level. And we deal with what's called Region 9, which is kind of the West Coast area. And they're kind of our ombudsman, I guess you could say, with the Region 9 people. And so and we work with them very closely. A young lady who is actually a contract employee with State Department of Emergency Management much similar, like my situation. She doesn't work full-time, but is involved in these mitigation plans and so forth. So I thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
No other questions?
I don't know. We'll take public comment now if anyone has anything to speak about on this ordinance. Hearing none, or resolution, I should say. Okay. Looking for a motion out to approve resolution 15-419.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 15-419, adoption of the Story County Hazard Mitigation Plan.
Second your motion. And move to second to approve item 20. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion carries. All right. We've already continued 21, 22, 23, 24. 25 has been deleted. Withdrawn. We continue items 26, 27. Move along out item number 28, the possible action licensing second licensing board second readings.
Mr. Chairman, and on behalf of Mr. Haymore, who is out at TRI, Community Development recommends approval of items A through G. That would be signs on signs, Cone Inc. Both of those are contractors. One based in Reno, one in Sacramento. Shore Management and Development Nevada, Inc. That's a general business license, construction management out of the park. Electro Spectra, Inc., a contractor from Reno. Great West Asphalt Paving, a contractor out of Las Vegas. Harris and Hart, Inc., a contractor out of Ogden, Utah. And Allied Sanitation Services, vacuum truck contractor from Yarrington, all to be approved as meeting our requirements.
And off the top, how many of these companies are directly resulted with the work of the TRI?
I would hazard to guess well over 50% of those, so probably of the seven that are there, at least four and possibly five.
Okay.
And possibly all, to be honest.
Okay. So I'm looking for a motion to approve items A through G of the licensing board second readings.
I'll make a motion to accept items A through G.
I'll second your motion. We'll move to second to approve items A through G. On item 28, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion carries.
And Community Development recommends continuing items H and I. As we work through the various requirements, that would be Ionix LLC, metal fabrication company out at the park, and Rich Doss, Inc., a transportation company out adjacent to the park, to be continued.
All right. Looking for a motion to continue items H and I, item 28. I'll second your motion. Been moved and second to continue H and I on item 28. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And motion carries. Move along now to item number 29, public comment. Mark, anything today? No? Ms. Bart? Mr. Joe Cover? Meeting's adjourned. Thank you all.